With so much uncertainty in the world and here at home recently, the COVID-19 pandemic still threatening our population, the rancorous presidential election, protests in the name of racial justice, unemployment and the economy in flux, wouldn't it be good to know what the future holds to help us make the right choices, decisions in our best interest? Of course, no one can predict exactly what the future will bring, yet there are authorities in certain fields who can share their best judgments on what the future might offer. To that end, in Next Avenue's August 11th, 2020 article, The New Normal in a Post-Vaccine World, they share a preview of a potential future life for older adults. Likewise, in the September 11th, 2020 Next Avenue article, 2020 Election, the American Society on Aging's panel of pundits weighs in, offers a range of political perspectives by Bob Lancato, elder advocate, with which I will begin. What's in store for older Americans from the 2020 presidential election? The five panelists brought a range of political perspectives and decades of experience in the aging and political worlds. Peter Caldas, president and CEO of ASA and a former Obama economic advisor, Richard Browdy of Browdy Consulting, formerly president and CEO of Benjamin Rose Institute on Aging, and Pennsylvania's Secretary of Aging, Joel White, founder and president of Horizon Government Affairs, and former Republican staff director of the House Ways and Means Health Subcommittee, J. Newton Small, a journalist for Time and Bloomberg News, and co-founder and CEO of The Memory Well, digital platform to improve the care of elders, and John Zogby, founder and senior partner of the John Zogby Strategies polling firm. Bob began the session asking the panelists to give a one-word description of 2020 so far. The responses were as dire as the year has been. Newton Small called the year Armageddon. During the freewheeling webinar, I asked the pundits everything from their outlook for a coronavirus vaccine. They were divided on whether there'd be one in 2020, to whether the Senate would flip in November and become Democratic-controlled. Most thought it would, but said not to count out the re-election of recurrent Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. Panelists were united on two issues. All thought the 2020 federal election would not go off without any serious hitches, which could delay the final election results, and all were in support of a fourth coronavirus emergency package, but most felt it wouldn't be done by October 1st. Here's where they came down on four key topics: Social Security, Medicare and telehealth, prescription drug prices, and their views on the top aging-related policy changes they'd like to see, whoever is elected president. First, Social Security. Most of the pundits felt that Social Security was not on the table as a 2020 election issue. However, most felt its solvency would be a serious issue in 2021, caused by increased unemployment, lowering contributions to Social Security, as well as the rising deficit. I asked whether President Trump put Social Security back on the political table when he suspended its payroll tax to provide stimulus checks to the American public. And I queried, shouldn't we start thinking seriously about the exhaustion of the Social Security Trust Fund? Joel White, wait a minute. Do we care about the trust funds and fiscal responsibility and all that stuff? Are you kidding me? We've got a $3.3 trillion deficit staring us in the face, according to the Congressional Budget Office, and the last time I heard someone on the Hill talk about trust fund balances and deficits and stuff like that, I think I was still on the Hill from 2004 to 2007. I don't think the Social Security issue is back on the political table this year. I think it's back on the table next year when we have a budget, whether Biden is elected or Trump is reelected. Richard Browdy, I would agree with Joel's assessment, and I do think that the Social Security financing thing will be back in the next president, whether he's planning to deal with it or not. He's going to have to dip in. Peter Caldas, I suspect that if candidate Biden wins, the next day we'll start hearing about balancing budgets again. So I'm a little concerned about that, but I'm with Rich on this one. I think using payroll taxes as a tool is something that President Obama did as well in some ways. In 2011 and 2012, the Obama administration cut payroll taxes by 2 percentage points to 4.2%. J. Newton Small, the Republican National Convention, for the first time, I think in history, did not have a platform this year, so it's hard to know for sure what President Trump's second-term agenda, if he were to be reelected, would be. But he's certainly spoken a lot about tackling deficits and entitlements like Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid, and appeasing more of the fiscal conservatives that he's got. But I do think, similarly, Joe Biden, as Peter was saying, if he were elected, would also tackle those issues. John Zogby, Social Security really faces insolvency just 10 years from now. So when do we begin the debate again about either a new funding mechanism for Social Security? Because demographically, there aren't enough young people who are working to sustain the numbers of baby boomers and income Gen Xers. 10 years is not far away. Or are we in a situation where we kick the can down the road? But at least for now, the federal debt and deficit continue to grow almost exponentially, and yet Social Security is just not on the table right now. But it has to be. Medicare and telehealth. I asked the pundits this question posed by webinar watcher Next Avenue's money and policy editor, Richard Eisenberg. How will Medicare change under the next president, and why? Peter Caldas. I think there are some wonderful opportunities under a Biden administration to really focus on the salaries of our caregivers and the direct care workforce. To that extent, Medicare gets the more involved with actual covering more of these at-home costs that are very real for people. I think that would be a wonderful addition to Medicare. J. Newton Small. I do think Donald Trump has certainly telegraphed that if he was reelected, he would move towards a Paul Ryan voucher-esque kind of plan for Medicare, which you definitely would never get through a Democratic-controlled House. It's interesting to see Biden move to the left thanks to Senator Bernie Sanders, and Senator Elizabeth Warren in the primaries on the issue of Medicare for All. He doesn't support Medicare for All, but I think he has certainly moved further along than he was when the election started. That said, I know a lot of people in the caregiving world were disappointed that his only nod to caregiving was a $4,000 a year kind of tax rebate for family caregivers. I think a lot will depend on the control of Congress. You're not going to make massive changes to Medicare unless you control both houses of Congress and the White House, as Obamacare showed how hard it is to get that through. Richard Browdy. There's a lot of ways that Medicare can be adjusted to pragmatic solutions to things that we've learned in this COVID experience. So I would think that pragmatism would lead to a number of changes in Medicare, partially for budget reasons, because it would be cheaper, partially because I think the sensibility about coverage has changed. You may not get to universal coverage by a particular government program, but I think the pressure to keep movement toward universal coverage will continue. Joel White, I think if next year is a big budget year, we're going to see big changes in Medicare. What is interesting to me is that both presidential candidates agree that there ought to be a cap in cost out-of-pocket expenses in Medicare Part D, the prescription drug part. I think I would put on the table in a big budget bill a cap on total costs, whether you're in fee-for-service, traditional Medicare, or otherwise in the Medicare program, Medicare Advantage private insurance plans, which would be good, so you're limiting your out-of-pocket costs. If a big budget deal is not in the works, I think Rich is right. There's going to be much more in the way of these pragmatic little problems bubbling up that we're going to fix, and that's across the board. Home health, nursing care, hospital care, physician services. The Medicare program right now is kind of in need of some tender, loving care. These kinds of bills come across about once every 7 years. And guess what next year is? It's the seventh year in the process. So I think something's going to happen, whether it's big or small. All panelists hailed the increased use of telehealth for Medicare beneficiaries during the pandemic, thanks to temporary COVID-19 rules, and hoped that many of the new policies enabling its greater use would remain permanent after the pandemic. However, some panelists voiced concerns about access to telehealth caused by the digital divide that some older adults are facing. Joel White, I think that what we see in access is really that Black and Brown communities are significantly disadvantaged here, largely because of access to broadband. And so, I think we need to make telehealth available across the country, rural, suburban, and urban. Peter, I think telehealth is here to stay. I would echo the sentiment that the guidelines need to be made permanent. J. Newton Small, I think that telehealth is the genie that is not going to be put back in the bottle now that people have realized how convenient it is. John Zugby, it's here to stay and will expand as well. Prescription drug prices. I asked the panelists whether the ability for Congress and the president to agree to a meaningful prescription drug bill had passed this year. J. Newton Small, I think it has, unless they tack it onto the larger spending bill. Caldas and Browdy agreed. But Newton Small added, there's usually a very productive lame duck session after the presidential election as they clear the decks for either the next president coming in or the next term of the current president. And I would say there's a potential for that if there's enough bipartisan agreement. But I don't think before the election, unless it somehow miraculously gets piggybacked onto a COVID bill. Joel White, I think it's more likely that the president is going to issue some programs around the executive orders that he signed at the end of July. The other thing that we are seeing here is that drug prices are actually down. They were negative last year at 1 7/10%. This year, a full percentage and a half point lower than they were under President Obama. So I think a lot of the political desire to go after the drug companies has dried up. The aging policy change they would most like to see. One of the more interesting questions during the webinar was posed by an audience member who asked what the panelists thought the top aging-related policy change should be, whoever is elected president. Their responses? White and Zogby called for expanded intergenerational mentoring programs. Browdy wanted to see the age for Medicare eligibility lowered from 65 to 60, which Biden has proposed. Caldas hoped for greater enforcement of age discrimination employment laws, and Newton Small favored increased reimbursement for home health care under Medicare. I found it interesting that none of the panelists talked about long-term care and long-term services and supports as election issues. This may suggest that the biggest financial liability issue facing boomers may not yet be seen as a political imperative issue. No panelist was willing to give a definitive answer as to who they thought would win the presidential election. Time, as pundits like to say, will tell. Clearly, the realities of 2021 will ensure that the next panel of pundits will have plenty to discuss. Author Bob Lancato is a national coordinator of the Elder Justice Coalition and a national advocacy voice supporting elder justice in America. Now, Bruce Horvitz's August 2020 article, The New Normal in a Post-Vaccine World. Imagine this scenario. Perhaps a year or two in the future, an effective COVID-19 vaccine is routinely available and the world is moving forward. Life, however, will likely never be the same, particularly for people over 60. That is the conclusion of geriatric medical doctors, aging experts, futurists, and industry specialists. Experts say that in the aftermath of the pandemic, everything will change, from the way older people receive health care to how they travel and shop. Also overturned, their work life and relationships with one another. In the past few months, the entire world has had a near-death experience, said Ken Dickwald, CEO of AgeWave, a think tank on aging around the world. We've been forced to stop and think. I could die, or someone I love could die. When these events happen, people think about what matters and what they will do differently. Older adults are uniquely vulnerable because their immune systems tend to deteriorate with age, making it so much harder for them to battle not just COVID-19, but all the infectious diseases. They are also more likely to suffer other health conditions like heart and respiratory diseases that make it tougher to fight or recover from illness. So it's no surprise that even in the future, when COVID-19 vaccine is widely available and widely used, most older adults will be taking additional precautions. Before COVID-19, baby boomers, those born after 1945 but before 1965, felt reassured that with all the benefits of modern medicine, they could live for years and years, said Dr. Mehrdad Ayati, who teaches geriatric medicine at Stanford University School of Medicine and advises the U.S. Senate Special Committee on Aging. What we've never calculated was that a pandemic could totally change the dialogue. It has. Here's a preview of post-vaccine life for older Americans. Medical care. Time to learn all about online health care. Only 62% of people over 75 use the internet, and fewer than 28% are comfortable with social media, according to data from the Pew Research Center. That's lethal in the modern age of healthcare, Dickwald said. So there will be a drumbeat to make them fluent users of online healthcare. 1 in 3 visits will be telemedicine. Dr. Ronan Factora, a geriatrician at Cleveland Clinic, said he saw no patients age 60 and up via telemedicine before the pandemic. He predicted that by the time a COVID-19 vaccine is available, at least a third of those visits will be virtual. It will become a significant part of my practice, he said. Older patients likely will see their doctors more often than once a year for a checkup and benefit from improved overall health care, he said. Many doctors instead of just one. More regular remote care will be bolstered by a team of doctors, said Dr. Greg Polin, professor of medicine and infectious diseases at the Mayo Clinic. The team model allows me to see more patients more efficiently, he said. If everyone has to come into the office and wait for the nurse to bring them in from the waiting room, well, that's an inherent drag on my productivity. Drugstores will do more vaccinations. To avoid the germs in doctors' offices, older patients will prefer to go to drugstores for regular vaccinations, such as flu shots, Factora said. Your plumbing will be your doctor. In the not-too-distant future, perhaps just a few years from now, older Americans will have special devices at home to regularly analyze urine and fecal samples, Dickwald said, letting them avoid the doctor's office. Travel. Punch up the Google Maps. Many trips of 800 miles or less will likely become road trips instead of flights, said Ed Perkins, a syndicated travel columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Perkins, who is 90, said that's certainly what he plans to do, even after there's a vaccine. Regional and local travel will replace foreign travel. Dickwald said he is 70 and he will be much less inclined to travel abroad. For example, he said, one time plans with his wife to visit India are now unlikely. even if a good vaccine is available, because they want to avoid large concentrations of people. That said, each year only 25% of people 65 and up travel outside of the U.S., versus 45% of the general population, according to a survey by Visa. The most popular trip for older adults? Visiting grandchildren. Demand for business class will grow. When older travelers who are financially able choose to fly, they will more frequently book roomy business class seats because they won't want to sit too close to other passengers, Factora said. Buying three seats for two. Older couples who fly together and have the money will pay for all three seats on a flight so that no one is between them, Perkins said. And hotels will market medical care. Medical capability will be built into more travel options, Dechtwald said. For example, some hotels will advertise a doctor on site or one close by. The era is over of being removed from healthcare and feeling comfortable, Dechtwald said. Disinfecting will be a sales pitch. Expect a rich combination of health and safety theater, particularly on cruises that host many older travelers. Perkins said employees will be wandering around with disinfecting fogs and wiping everything 10 times, and cruises will require proof of vaccination. Passengers as well as cruise employees will likely have to prove they have been vaccinated before traveling, Factora said. Eating. Local eateries will gain trust. Neighborhood and small market restaurants will draw loyal customers, mainly because they know and trust the owners, said Christopher Muller, a hospitality professor at Boston University. Safety will be a restaurant's bragging point. To appeal to older diners in particular, restaurants will prominently display safety inspection signage and visibly signal their cleanliness standards, Muller said. They will even hire employees exclusively to wipe down tables, chairs, and all high-touch points, and these employees will be easy to identify and very visible. Home life and shopping. The homecoming. Because of so many COVID-19 deaths in nursing homes, more older adults will leave assisted living facilities and nursing homes to move in with their families, Factora said. Families will generally move closer together. The fortress, home delivery of almost everything, will become the norm for older Americans, and in-person shopping will become much less common, Factora said. And increase in grocery deliveries. The 60 and up workforce increasingly will be reluctant to work anywhere but from home and will be very slow to re-embrace grocery shopping. Instacart delivery will become the new normal for them, Dechtwald said. Gatherings. Forced social distancing. Whenever or wherever large families gather, people exhibiting COVID-like symptoms may not be welcomed under any circumstances, Ayati said. Older adults will disengage at a cost. Depression will skyrocket among older people who isolate from family get-togethers and large gatherings, Ayati said. As the older population pulls back from engaging in society, this is a very bad thing. Public restrooms will be revamped. For germ avoidance, they'll increasingly get no-touch toilets, urinals, sinks, and entrances and exits. One of the most disastrous places you can go into is a public restroom, Poland said, and that's about the riskiest place. Author Bruce Horowitz is a national freelance writer and media training consultant, a former USA Today marketing report and Los Angeles Times marketing columnist. We have a few minutes to add this from Randy Mazzella's August 2020 article, Feel Like You're on a Corona Coaster? You're not alone. Some wish life could go back to normal. Well, welcome to the Corona Coaster, the word created to describe the ups and downs of your mood during pandemic. We keep hearing the word unprecedented to describe what has happened in the last few months, and it's true. Joan T. McGill, a clinical psychologist in Boca Raton, Florida, says, "We human beings like to feel comfortable by feeling in charge of our lives. Being in charge usually means we have a regular pattern with which we are familiar." Dr. Gail Saltz, an associate professor of psychiatry at the New York Presbyterian Hospital, Weill Cornell School of Medicine, and host of Personology podcast from iHeartRadio, explains, "We are not in this together, though. Some people have lost a lot more than others." He compares it to the five stages of grief: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance, which people mistakenly believe always happen in order. Just like when we're dealing with grief, don't expect feelings to be linear. Individual circumstances will shift us in and out of different stages and emotions, she says. Here are a few tips for riding the Corona coaster. Give yourself permission to be anxious. Joseph Tropper, a clinical therapist with Corewell, which offers virtual mental health presentations, says acknowledging anxiety is always the first step to overcoming it. Give yourself some time to process it and reach out for support from others. You'll need help sometimes, especially during times of crisis. Don't allow social distancing to make you emotionally distant from friends and family. And don't beat yourself up. We might feel guilty for being down or complaining about little inconveniences when people are suffering worse than we are, Salt says, but we have all experienced some level of disappointment, and it's okay to be sad as long as you maintain perspective. Don't judge others. Again, we are all in different boats in this storm. You don't know what another person is going through or what their circumstances are. Practice patience and empathy for everyone, from your best friend to the cashier at the market. Filter your news sources. Tropper suggests going on a media diet. Pick a small list of reliable sources, including the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and your local government, to rely on for news. Stay informed, but try not to ruminate. Set a time limit and avoid reading the news before bedtime. Stay healthy, making nutritional food choices, staying hydrated, limiting alcohol consumption, exercising, and practicing good sleep hygiene are essential for physical and emotional health. And seek professional help. Don't be afraid to talk to a physician or a therapist if you are feeling depressed or overwhelmed. Most are offering both in-person and telehealth options. The desire to want things to go back to normal is understandable, as is the fear of going back to normal or concerns about what the new normal will look like. So resist the urge to admonish yourself for having mixed emotions. Be extra kind to yourself instead. To finish up, I can only repeat what the pundits say. Time will tell. Thanks for listening, and until next week, I'm Kathy Vanskoyk.